The Hearth and the Salamander.
Would you mind giving me a more in-depth explanation of the novel? Maybe we could go through the novel chapter by chapter.
Sure. Before the novel even starts, you should note the significance of the title 451 degrees Fahrenheit.
The temperature at which book paper catches fire and burns.
Also note the epigram by Juan Ramon Jimenez.
If they give you ruled paper, write the other way.
Why would someone have this epigram at the beginning of the book? Is that important?
Yes, it is. Jimenez lived from 1881 to 1958. He was a Spanish poet who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1956. This quote means that whatever people tell you to do, such as follow orders in a totalitarian system, for example, don't do it. Try to be a nonconformist. The implications of both quotes, the first, a simple scientific fact, and the other, a challenge to authority, gain immense significance by the conclusion of the book.
But now, let's talk about the content of the novel.
Okay. The book consists of three chapters. The first one is The Hearth and the Salamander. It begins with a description of the main character, Guy Montag, in the middle of a night at work.
He's a fireman, isn't he?
Right. And in the 24th century, firemen burn down houses where illegal books are kept. Burning books gives Montag a great sense of happiness and satisfaction. Bradbury writes,
Montag grinned the fierce grin of all men singed and driven back by flame.
And even when Montag returns to the fire station, he will still be happy and even wink to himself in the mirror. On his way home, he is in high spirits and whistles. Though he initially seems moderately content with his job and his life in general, Montag's mind reflects the condition of his futuristic society. It's empty. He walks home from work every night, thinking little at all about nothing in particular.
In this world, people don't seem to care much about the deeper questions of philosophy and religion.
Yes, they are consumed with instant gratification. Gratification that distracts them from larger, more important, yet unsettling issues. In the meantime, the government, which strongly promotes this lifestyle, is struggling to sugarcoat a major world war, which threatens to tear the nation apart physically. Walking home on this particular evening, Montag already anticipates that something will happen. He has the feeling that he's being watched, although not in a bad way.
And then he meets his teenage neighbor, Clarice McClellan.
Exactly. She immediately recognizes him as a fireman and seems fascinated by him and his uniform. She explains that she is crazy and proceeds to suggest that the original duty of firemen was to extinguish fires rather than to light them.
Why does she think she's crazy?
Well, she likes to go for walks, for example.
And that's considered crazy.
At least it's uncommon in the 24th century. Clarice asks Montag about his job and tells him that she comes from a strange family that does such peculiar things as talk to each other and go for walks. She wants to know if he ever reads the books he burns. Clarissa's strangeness makes Guy nervous, and he laughs repeatedly and involuntarily. He can't help feeling somehow attracted to her. She fascinates him with her outrageous questions, unorthodox lifestyle, perceptive observations, and incredible power of identification. At the same time, Clarice also gives the reader the opportunity to see that society has changed.
Have you ever watched the jet cars racing on the boulevards down that way? I sometimes think drivers don't know what grass is, or flowers, because they never see them slowly, she said. If you showed a driver a green blur, oh yes, he'd say, that's grass. A pink blur? That's a rose garden. White blurs are houses. Brown blurs are cows.
Furthermore, the government has dramatically changed what its citizens perceive as their history. Montag never knew that firemen used to fight actual fires, or that billboards used to be only 20 feet long. Now they have to stretch for miles so that the fast cars can read them.
And he didn't know that people would actually talk to each other, like he now did with Clarice.
Yes, and he never experienced anything like that before. Never.
He never experienced what? That people talk. I talk all day long.
You talk all day long, but you probably wouldn't in Montag's and Clarice's time. The governmental use of parlor walls has eliminated the need for casual conversation.
Sorry to interrupt you again, but what are parlor walls?
Parlor walls are humongous TV screens on every wall in a living room. Montag just got a third wall installed, and Mildred would like to get a fourth wall to have an even more real TV experience.
It'll be even more fun when we can afford to have the fourth wall installed. How long you figure before we save up and get the fourth wall torn out and a fourth wall TV put in? If we had a fourth wall, why, it'd be just like this room wasn't ours at all, but all kinds of exotic people's rooms.
His wife was more than willing to give up conversations with Montag for a new TV wall. No wonder Montag is so fascinated with Clarisse.
You're right. But let's get back to the storyline. Clarisse arouses Montag's curiosity and begins to help him discover that real happiness has been missing from his life for quite some time. Just before she reaches their home, Clarisse asks if he's really happy. His first spontaneous reply is,
"Am I what?"
He is totally taken aback and is surprised that he hasn't asked himself this question before. But now it's triggering something in him. At first, he replies to himself that he surely was happy, but this will change very soon.
And then, what's going to happen?
Once at home, he feels emptiness and goes to the bedroom. There, he finds his wife, Mildred Montag. She is lying on the bed with her seashell radios in her ears.
His wife stretched on the bed like a body displayed on the lid of a tomb, her eyes fixed to the ceiling by invisible threads of steel, immovable. And in her ears, the little seashells, the thimble radios tamped tight. And an electronic ocean of sound, of music and talk and music and talk coming in on the shore of her unsleeping mind. The room was indeed empty.
The image of a body displayed on the lid of a tomb is a strong image. Is Mildred dying?
Mildred is laying motionless on the bed. She has overdosed on tranquilizers and sleeping pills. Two impersonal technicians are called and will eventually save Mildred.
What are the impersonal technicians? Why do they come?
Montag called them. Impersonal technicians perform a job similar to our paramedics, but in contrast to today, they are impersonal. They have no name and are service personnel. They bring machines that scare Montag, to pump her stomach, and to provide a total transfusion.
But Mildred could possibly overdose again and never even know it. That's at least the impression I have. The reason of the overdose isn't obvious. It could be either an attempted suicide or a result of sheer mindlessness.
After the ambulance has left and Mildred is sleeping again, Montag watches Clarisse's family through the window. He wishes that he could be a part of their happiness and laugh with them. Instead, he returns to the emptiness of his bed and realizes that nothing is the way it used to be.
"I don't know anything anymore," he said, and let a sleep lozenge dissolve on his tongue.
The next morning, Mildred is already up when Montag wakes. He finds her in the kitchen listening to the humming of her radio. When asked how she feels, she nods and seems to have no recollection of the ambulance having to save her. When Montag wants to discuss the matter, Mildred doesn't believe Montag. All she knows is that she's really hungry.
But we don't know if it was suicide or if Mildred was just mindless.
In the evening, Mildred is watching a new program in the parlor, their three-wall TV. She is fascinated that she can now be a part of the show by filling in some sentences. When Montag wants to know more about the play, Mildred can't tell him anything. All she knows is that it is fun. Their conversation stops.
So far, it seems that Montag has a real problem. He seemed to love his job, but now Clarisse comes around and messes up his whole life. And as if he didn't have enough to think about after all Clarisse said, his wife has now tried to commit suicide. They seem to have a big communication problem. How does the story develop?
Before the story of Montag and Mildred continues, Montag encounters Clarisse again. Clarisse goes for a walk with him the next day, and she tells him that she is forced to go to the psychiatrist because people just don't understand why she would want to hike in the forests or collect butterflies or pick flowers.
I remember. She asks Montag questions that leave him puzzled, tells him that the rain tastes good, or she states that he really isn't in love.
But most strikingly, Clarisse declares that she is not afraid of Montag, even though he's a fireman.
"Sometimes I even forget you're a fireman. You're not like the others. I've seen a few. I know. When I said something about the moon, you looked at the moon last night. The others would never do that. The others would walk off and leave me talking, or threaten me. You're one of the few who put up with me. That's why I think it's so strange you are a fireman. It just doesn't seem right for you somehow.
Clarisse asks Montag how he became a fireman. She thinks that he doesn't seem like the rest of them. He tolerates her and the things she talks about. Clarisse's inquiry makes Montag begin to question his work.
Does he start to look at the moon during work or taste rain during work?
No, he doesn't. But you're right in a way, because Montag starts to act strangely. He asks his co-workers if firemen hadn't once existed to extinguish fires, talks about what it must be like to have firemen come in and destroy your home. All of his questions of the job of a fireman makes Captain Betty, his boss, suspicious that Montag must be up to something. Montag's interchange is noticeable for the first time when he returns to the fire station, and the mechanical hound reacts in a funny manner.
The mechanical hound? That's the eight-legged living beast which helps the firemen to find books.
And Montag was always fascinated by it. When Montag watches the mechanical hound, it all of a sudden becomes alive and growls at him. His heart pounding, he returns to his colleagues as soon as possible. Captain Betty sees that something is wrong with Montag, and when he explains what just happened, he suggests that someone may have set the hound to react to him like that, since it has threatened him twice before. Usually the hound only threatens suspects, and it has never been wrong in the past.
If the mechanical hound was never wrong, this could mean that it senses Montag's inner development.
That's exactly what I think. Montag wonders aloud what the hound thinks about and pities it when Betty replies that it thinks only what they tell it to think, of hunting and killing and so forth. The other firemen tease Montag about the hound. One tells him about a fireman in Seattle who committed suicide by setting a hound on his own chemical complex, meaning the mechanical hound will hunt after him. Betty assures him no one would have done that to Montag and promises to have the hound checked. Over the next week, Montag will see Clarisse whenever he leaves the house.
And she'll always surprise him with her non-conforming art. Montag seems to have found a new friend in Clarisse, despite the age difference.
Definitely. They talk a lot, and Montag feels as if they've known each other a lifetime. Then, on the seventh day, Clarisse is gone. At the firehouse, everything is normal, only Montag has changed. He starts to ask questions about his job, about the moral implications of his job, and he starts to watch his fellow firemen closely and tries to figure out if they are happy and what happiness is. Captain Betty feels his uneasiness.
Beatty was looking at him as if he were a museum statue.
When Montag asks all these questions out loud, he comes across as being an outsider. It's as if Clarisse is asking the questions.
Suddenly, it seems a much younger voice is speaking for him. He opened his mouth and it was Clarisse McClellan saying, "Didn't firemen prevent fires rather than stoke them up and get them going?"
When Montag is still pondering the meaning of life and his quest for happiness, the alarm goes off and the firemen are called to the house of an old lady. The firemen accuse her of owning books, find the books, and spill kerosene over everything in the house. Montag is rather perplexed that there is someone in the house. Usually they simply burn books.
But now the books have a face. Montag must be paralyzed.
Right. And he doesn't help his colleagues. It gets even worse when the woman doesn't want to leave her house, but takes a match and sets herself and the house in flames. On the way back to the firehouse, everyone is silent.
Wow. I can imagine that was a huge shock for Montag. In the course of the novel, he already changed when he started to look for the purpose of his life. But I don't think that Montag really grasped what is going on, nor did he realize that he is no longer one of them. He's still insecure and finding himself. This incident must have had a deep impact on him.
It surely did. In shock, he arrives at home, unable to think properly, unable to listen to his wife chatting as if she was a little kid making noises without producing sentences. He's unable to undress. His hands do that for him. In the middle of the night, when he still lies wide awake, he looks over to Mildred with her seashell radio in her ear.
He doesn't know this woman. She's a stranger. And he's a stranger in his own house.
He can't even remember when they met for the first time. When he asks Mildred, she doesn't know either. Mildred spends her days watching the so-called family on TV. All of a sudden, Montag feels this huge emptiness growing inside him. He misses Clarisse. He hasn't seen her in the last couple of days. But Clarisse is gone, run over by a speeding car.
She's dead? Just like that?
Yes. She was killed in a car accident. The next morning, Montag is sick. The emerging gap between Mildred and Montag grows wider when she is unable to take care of him. She forgets to bring him aspirin and doesn't turn down her TV in the parlor. You can imagine the importance of the TV parlor.
From what you just said, she probably doesn't even do that on purpose. She's too stupid to act on purpose, and she's probably unaware of Montag's needs. She hasn't had any real feelings in years. The only reality she knows is her TV family.
When Montag tries to tell her about the old woman that burned herself, she doesn't even try to listen, but chit-chats away about her evening and what was on the show.
Of course, she doesn't call Captain Betty to report Montag sick.
But that's not necessary because Captain Betty is already on his way. He sits next to Montag and shows sympathy and tells him to take the day off.
Every fireman sooner or later hits this. They only need understanding to know how the wheels run, need to know the history of our profession. They don't feed it to rookies like they used to. Only fire chiefs remember it now. I'll let you in on it.
So Montag's feelings are normal. Every fireman hits this point, where he wonders what he's doing, and all he needs is some insight in the history of his job and its importance.
Why do firemen burn books? What's the whole point of it?
Everything probably started back at the time of the Civil War in the U.S., and with the increase of mass media in the early 20th century.
I think, according to Betty, mass always means simple. Everything has to be really simple and easy to understand. It's no longer a time of intellectual thinking.
Mm-hmm. Books, on the other hand, are diverse, and they're not just mass. They are for many people. This wasn't a problem at first, because the population was small enough, and there was enough room for ideas. But when the population increased, everything speeded up. Captain Betty says to Montag,
"Speed up the film, Montag, quick. Click, pick, look, eye, now, flick, here, there, swift, pace, up, down, in, out, why, how, who, what, where, huh? Bang, smack, wallop, bing, bong, boom, digest, digests, digest, digest, digests. Politics? One column, two sentences, a headline."
There are 15-minute shortcuts of all major novels on TV. Politics are reduced to headlines. The school curriculum is reduced accordingly. Philosophy and history are dropped. Nobody needs that anymore. English is reduced to a minimum. In Montag's age, life is immediate and solely fun-oriented. For example, ball games are very popular, such as baseball and basketball.
Why are sports so popular and not music or literature?
Captain Betty explains that sports stand for a maximum of fun and pleasure. You don't need an education to enjoy a night at the ball game. And most important, you don't need to think.
What role do books play in society?
A problem of the 20th century was the way minorities were dealt with and the pursuit of happiness. Everybody should be happy and has the right to be happy. Books can offend and therefore are no good. The banning of books was, at first, a natural movement. People simply stopped reading books. They preferred comics. With the decline of books, the term intellectual turned into a swear word. Books offer alternative lifestyles and beliefs. Books let you be different. And in other words, unfamiliar. Captain Betty says,
"You always dread the unfamiliar."
That's where the danger of books comes in. They allow for differences. In the course of time, houses were built fireproof, and hence firemen were no longer needed. Firemen were assigned a new task: custodians of peace of mind, official censors, judges, and executors.
I can't believe Betty is serious about that. He really wants to ban every form of individuality. I mean, that's scary.
Captain Betty emphasizes once more the importance of happiness and how harmful books can be. Before Betty leaves Montag, Montag wants to know what happened to Clarisse. Was she killed? She was a ticking time bomb, according to Betty, under constant surveillance.
But her death was an accident.
Nevertheless, Betty uses the opportunity to highlight the importance of happiness, and that in order to be happy, people shouldn't be given two sides of an opinion. In school, they shouldn't be raised to be self-thinking individuals, but just learn the facts. Montag's final question to Betty is what happens to firemen that take books home with them. Betty answers,
"We let the fireman keep the book 24 hours. If he hasn't burned it by then, we simply come by and burn it for him."
Has Montag any books at home?
What makes you think so? You're right. During the whole visit, Montag hid a book under his pillow, and at one point, Mildred discovered it and was going to say something, but Montag told her to keep quiet.
Was this the only book? Presumably the one he took from the old woman.
There are more. Soon after Captain Betty is gone, Montag takes a chair, moves it into the hall, and climbs up on it. He stands there like a statue on a pedestal, his wife watching him anxiously and curiously at the same time. He pulls back the grill of the air conditioning system and pulls down some 20 books from inside. He starts reading.
And he doesn't really care what his wife thinks about it.
And even when someone is at the door, he still wants to go on reading, even though he knows that this could be his end.
"Someone here?" "We won't answer." Montag lay back against the wall and then slowly sank to a crouching position and began to nudge the books, bewilderedly with his thumb, his forefinger. He was shivering and he wanted above all to shove the books up through the ventilator afraid, but he knew he could not face Beatty again. He crouched and then he sat, and the voice of the front door spoke again, more insistently. Montag picked a single small volume from the floor. "Where do we begin?" He opened the book halfway and peered at it. "We begin at the beginning, I guess."
I wonder if the books have an effect on Montag. I haven't really thought about whether books have an effect on me. But that is an interesting question. I mean, we take books and all the different sources of information for granted, and our media doesn't seem to be censored as in Montag's world.
The books do have a deep impact on Montag, as we will see in Chapter 2, The Sieve and the Sand.